Rarecast listeners, join us for Global Genes Live, a Rare Patient Advocacy Unsummit, September 14th to the 25th. This two-week virtual event will feature a variety of interactive and educational events, meetups, workshops, and performances. Whether you're a rare disease veteran or new to the community, we invite you to connect and engage with us and others through interactive activities. To learn more, visit globalgenes.org/live.
I'm Daniel Levine, and this is Rarecast.
Short bowel syndrome is a life-threatening rare disease caused by a significant shortening of the gastrointestinal tract. Because of difficulties people with short bowel syndrome have properly absorbing nutrients, they rely on receiving them through intravenous infusions. This has an impact on quality of life for people with the condition and comes with a high risk of systemic infections. 9 Meters Biopharma is focused on rare gastrointestinal conditions. It's advancing an experimental therapy for short bowel syndrome. We spoke to John Temperato, president and CEO of 9 Meters, about short bowel syndrome, the company's experimental therapy to treat the condition, and how the company has built its pipeline through 2 recent mergers. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk about the recent mergers that created 9 Meters, its efforts to develop therapies for rare GI disorders, and one of those conditions, short bowel syndrome. Let's start with the name 9 Meters, though. What's the significance of that?
Yeah, we thought it very important when creating a company that's new to the marketplace, both to providers, patients, and to the public markets, that we create a name that's memorable, speaks to the vision of the company and our dedication to the therapeutic space. So we spent a lot of time and effort and then researching the name, and 9 Meters speaks to the approximate length of the GI tract. So as I mentioned, speaks to our dedication to the GI space. We also spend a lot of time, believe it or not, on whether to use a digit in the name or utilize letters to spell it out. And so did a lot of research with that as well and decided on the digit because the digit's always the first in the alphabet. So it's a nice side benefit, if you will.
9 Meters was formed through the merger of Innovate Biopharmaceuticals and RDD Pharma. And then there was another acquisition, Naya Rare Diseases, or a merger. How did these all come about?
Yeah, great question. About a year and a half ago, I was recruited to be the chief executive officer of RDD Pharma, which is a company at the time headquartered in Tel Aviv in Israel. And I was recruited there by 2 folks. One is Mark Sergo, and Mark was on our board at Salix. And Salix is a large part of the story. I was with Salix for about 10 years, and Salix became the largest independent GI company in the world. Anyways, Mark was on our board at Salix, and Mark was recruited to be the chairman of the board at RDD by Nissim Darvish from OrbiMed. And as you know, OrbiMed is one of the leading life science investment firms in the world. So they recruited me to run RDD with 3 things in mind. One was to devise a new compelling strategy. 2 was to build out the pipeline, and 3 was to get the company public. So in short order, I agreed with the RDD board to devise a strategy whereby we focus on rare, orphan, and unmet needs in gastroenterology. The world does not need the 50th product for mild to moderate ulcerative colitis in adults or another bowel purgative, although some people who just gotten a colonoscopy might disagree with that one. So nonetheless, we devised a new strategy, and then concurrent to that, we scour the world and looking to build out the pipeline and began looking at about 50 different assets, narrowed that down to about 10, and began acquiring Naya rare diseases. At the same time, we were acquiring NIA Rare Diseases, Innovate Biopharmaceuticals, a public company, sent out a release saying they were looking for a new CEO and to explore strategic directions. Well, to make all the world small, I was very familiar with Innovate for a couple of reasons. At Salix, we were in the process of acquiring their lead asset, lorazepam, which is for celiac disease, when we were acquired ourselves, so much so that the founder of Salix, Dr. Lauren Johnson, ended up on the board at Innovate. So within several weeks, we had signed a definitive agreement with Innovate. Took us about 4 to 5 months to close the merger. And on top of that, we folded in NIA Rare Diseases to create a company that was dedicated and aligned to the vision that we had set forth.
What are these mergers allowing you to do together that each of you couldn't do on your own?
I think it really does several things. It gives us the bandwidth because of the integration and the people that we brought together to execute against that strategy. It provides us a robust portfolio for a new company and a new biotech company. So a lot of times you'll see an emerging biotech company and a new company that has a pipeline of 4 or 5 or 6 rows, but they really have one product or one platform. So they're a binary event to that product or a platform. What's really unique about us for an emerging biotech company and a new co, and I really do want people to look at us as a total new company, because in effect we are, we have a multitude of products in our pipeline. We have 2 co-lead assets, one for celiac disease and one for short bowel syndrome, which you mentioned previously. And then we have follow-on compounds as well. So we're truly not a binary success event, and we have a robust portfolio and pipeline. So the combination of those companies enabled us to bring the right people together, which is first and foremost important, and then to bring the technologies that were aligned with our strategy.
Is the expectation that you'll continue to build your pipeline through acquisitions here?
Yeah, if there's one thing, absolutely, great question. If there's one thing that we've learned in our lengthy history in the industry is that we'll never stop looking for interesting technologies that align with the strategy. I think that's an important part of any corporation's narrative, is to continue to invest in yourself. But it's a balance. I will say that it's a balance, because you need to balance the amount of opportunities that you bring in with your ability to execute against those opportunities and manage the burn or the spend that's associated with them. So it will always be a balance, but that doesn't mean that we won't continue to look to build out our portfolio for interesting opportunities.
So how much financing do you have right now, and how far is that going to take you?
So we closed the merger in the midst of COVID-19, when the markets were doing the wild swings of, you know, 4 or 5,000 points a day. So it was an interesting time to raise money concurrently. But through all that, we were still able to bring in over $22 million of financing. And that financing enabled us to cement the mergers between the three organizations, bring the company live, listed on NASDAQ under the ticker symbol NMTR, and also enables us to hit 2 key inflection points for our 2 lead assets. So for celiac, it enables us to get through to an interim analysis. Celiac is a 630 patient trial, after half of which patients are completed. We'll have a interim analysis, which is a statistical sizing analysis, which will help us, you know, understand how to manage the program going forward. And then the second, it gets us to the top line data for our short bowel program, which is a single study site center out at Cedar Sinai in California. And that program will be getting underway very, very soon. And we hope to get top line results on that as early as the end of the year, or the first half of 2021.
I did want to take a little deeper dive on the short bowel syndrome indication. Why don't we start there? What is short bowel syndrome?
Yeah, so it's exactly what it says. So I mentioned earlier, the name of the company is 9 meters, and that's because the average length of a GI tract is 9 meters. So somebody with short bowel syndrome is somebody who has 2 meters or less of their bowels. So, and they got that through a result of different ways. One is genetics, but that's the smallest proportion. Less than 2% of people who have short bowel got that through a genetic disposition. More likely they got that through a resection as a result of having Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, or they were in some kind of accident, whether it was vehicular or a motorcycle accident that damaged their GI tract in such a sufficient and harsh manner that a large portion of it had to be removed. So what happens with these patients, because they have 2 meters or less of bowels, is that they have the inability to absorb nutrients. And if you don't have the ability to absorb nutrients, I hate to be crass, but you're not long for the world, unfortunately. So that's what short bowel syndrome is.
The folks with the genetic form of the condition, how are they diagnosed? Is this something that's apparent prior to birth or at birth, or is this something that's has to go?
It's a combination, but it could be a genetic effect, and it could also just be a birth defect.
But is that apparent at birth, or is there something that has to be diagnosed to figure that out?
No, it would be apparent at birth.
So how does this condition manifest itself and progress?
So as I said, the progression really is when you have 2 meters or less of bowels, you have the inability to absorb nutrients. And unfortunately, if you have the inability to absorb nutrients, you have a whole cohort of issues. So for example, everything you can imagine, your transit time, and transit time speaks to your ability to ingest and then and digest and then ultimately excrete. So that time when somebody has a short bowel or 2 meters or less is very, very short. So you have obviously severe GI complications as a result of that short transit time. And then not to mention the lack of nutrients that you're absorbing. So it could have a whole host of issues that cause.
How is it generally treated today?
So treated today, there's two primary ways. One is called parenteral support. And parenteral support is a IV bag of fluids, typically daily, that provides the necessary nutrients for a patient to survive. And depending upon your body's ability to adapt over time, some patients might need that parenteral support daily, and some might need it, you know, 3 times a week or once a week. So it really depends upon the person. Then around 6 years ago, there was a GLP-2, which is a peptide that was brought to market by a company then called NPS, which was ultimately bought by Shire for a little over $5 billion. And then Shire was subsequently acquired by Takeda. And they have a GLP-2, which has been on the market for about 6 years. And they have north of 1,300 patients under management on that drug. And the goal of that drug mechanistically was to grow a villous architecture within your bowels to absorb nutrients. So that's sort of the standard of care, if you will, right now, along with parenteral support.
When you acquired Naya, you got a hold of NM002 for short bowel syndrome. This is a phase 2 ready candidate. What is NM002?
Yeah, it's a long acting GLP-1 agonist. And so basically what we have is we've put together exenatide, which has been a product that's been on the market for diabetes for a number of years. Although it's a first generation, if you will, diabetic product, meaning that it was optimized for gastric effect. A lot of the newer A1C or GLP-1s are optimized for pancreatic effect. But because this was optimized for gastric effect, it's almost the perfect drug that was designed for short bowel. The issue with it, though, has a very short half-life. So the predecessor, Naya, had worked with a company called Amunix to bolt on a technology called X10, which gives us the ability to dose this product up to potentially once a month, or at worst case, potentially twice a month. And when you look at Gattex, which I mentioned earlier, which is that GLP-2, that's dosed daily in perpetuity. So one of the big advantages we should have or potentially will have is dosing, amongst others.
How does the drug work?
Yeah. So unlike GATTEX, the GLP-2, which grows this villus architecture, which the goal is to snag nutrients as you digest them, the goal of the GLP-1 or our product is to slow the transit time. So the time, as I said earlier, when you eat food into which you excrete food, you slow it down to such a point, it gives the ability to absorb the nutrients while you're in the digestion process. So that's mechanistically how we're designed to work.
GLP-1 is naturally produced in the gut. Is there a risk of a patient having or producing too much GLP-1 with this drug?
No, that's a great question. As a result of the short bowel and the 2 meters or less, these patients have the inability to produce GLP-1. So that's one of the advantages of our product, is to provide these patients the GLP-1 that they are missing as a result of their lack of bowel. That's a good question.
What's known about NM002 from studies to date?
Yeah, so there was a proof of concept trial done out at Cedars-Sinai in California, one of the preeminent GI teaching hospitals in the world. And it was done by a renowned gastroenterologist named Dr. Mark Pimentel. And in Dr. Pimentel's proof of concept trial, 60% of the patients, or 3 of the 5 of the patients, never had to go back to parenteral support as a result of taking the GLP-1. So that led NIA to work with Amunix and bolt on this Xtend technology to create a molecule that's really a game changer versus the current standard of care. And not only from a dosing standpoint, but from a safety profile standpoint as well. One of the disadvantages of the GATTEX product is, because it does grow this villus architecture, it can also grow bad things and has a warning from the FDA for neoplastic growth warnings, which means it can grow polyps. And as you know, there's a sequence called an adenoma carcinoma sequence. And if you've ever had a colonoscopy, the doctor snagged a polyp, she'll probably say to you, lucky we snagged that polyp, because eventually that could grow into a carcinogenic issue for you. So that's one of the big advantages we have, is from a safety. And then from an efficacy standpoint, if our phase 2 and then ultimately our phase 3 aligns with the proof of concept, we'll have a big potential advantage versus GATTEX or the standard of care, which didn't see numbers or the percentage increase in efficacy that we saw in our proof of concept trial.
And what's the clinical path forward?
Yeah, so the clinical path forward is, we're about to commence this this trial, this 1B2A trial at Cedars-Sinai. It's a single study site center. It's a 12-patient trial. Cedars has the patients identified. And we look to execute that beginning very shortly, and then throughout the fall, get the top line data later this year or the beginning of next year, then work with the agency on the phase 3 design and bridge right to a phase 3. The nice thing about short bowel syndrome from a drug development standpoint is that it's orphan designation, meaning there's 200,000 patients or less. And for short bowel, there's about 20,000 in the U.S. and 20,000 adults and 20,000 peds. And what all that means is that you have the potential to get breakthrough therapy. The disease has orphan drug designation. So it's a 6-month review versus a 12-month review. It's a single study versus multiple studies in phase 3. It's also a smaller size of study. So all that gives you a path forward that gives you a way to capitally efficient way to develop the product.
John Temperato, President and CEO of 9 Meters Biopharma. John, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more information about rare disease and to connect to the rare disease community, go to globalgenes.org. To keep up on the latest news and trends affecting the rare disease community, be sure to visit raredaily.org. You can subscribe to the RareCast RSS feed through raredaily.org or through SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast manager. The RareCast is produced for Global Genes by the Levine Media Group. You can also find our podcast, The Bio Report, on these popular podcast sites. Our theme music is composed by Jonah Levine and
performed by the Jonah Levine Collective. We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a note at Danny@LevineMediaGroup.com.